Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hi, this is Henry Gilroy, co-executive producer of Star Wars Rebels. You're listening to Aggressive Negotiations.
Welcome to Aggressive Negotiations, that beautiful little spot in the Star Wars galaxy that's just bright and wonderful and full of Star Wars love. I am one of your hosts, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as he is always, the inimitable Master John Mills.
I am very inimitable, and as soon as I find out what that means, I will let you know whether I'm flattered to be it. So let me go over to the Google and find it. Oh, yes, that's delightful. Yes, thank you. Yeah, good to be here as always, Matt. And yay, Aggressive Negotiations, the trailblazer for awesome contests for reviews, I'd say.
I have to say, John, I've been so excited to see the response that we have been getting to this review contest. And I'm not surprised, because with the loot that Chris, our listener, provided for us, I would be wanting this too if I could be a part of this. Mm-hmm. We have a bunch of great new reviews that we want to call out, and they are all in the running now. A 1 in 30 shot at winning a lot of great stuff. You can check it out. We've been posting it on Twitter so you can see what you'd be winning. This one says, great Star Wars podcast, 5 stars. John Kreitz writes this. It said, like the rest of the Nerd Party shows, this podcast is a thoughtful, positive, and well-produced show. The host's knowledge and love of Star Wars shows through in every episode! Exclamation point! So,
yes.
Which is really important when you're reading a review to get the exclamation point in. Thank you so much, John. We really appreciate that. That is definitely our goal, to be positive, to be thoughtful, to have fun, and most importantly, honestly, we also try to make this as well produced as possible for you guys. So it's audibly pleasing. So thank you so much for entering the contest.
Yes, thank you. And our next review is from Amy Notes. And it, too, is a 5-star, and it's titled, Thank You for the Positivity. And it actually has stage direction on here saying, spoken in movie man voice. So let me give this a shot, Matt.
In a world full of negativity and strife, it is rare to come across a podcast where people can speak honestly and respectfully. This is that podcast.
All kidding aside, thanks, guys. Well, thank you, Amy, because we love reading things in silly voices, and we appreciate that stage direction. It's very enjoyable, and you gave us a little thrill, not just with your review, but with the direction on there. So thank you very much for taking the time to write that review for us.
Absolutely, and honestly, it was a fun review to read, and it really did. I'm not going to lie. It really warmed my heart when I saw that one. So appreciate that our goal of trying to just give you Star Wars goodness is really starting to shine through. So the next review is, what a great podcast! Exclamation point! 5 stars from Ashley2308. It said, hi! Exclamation point. I wanted to make my opinion on Aggressive Negotiations clear. It's amazing! Exclamation point. You guessed it. I love this show, and I always look forward to it. The hosts are really likable and great at podcasting. My favorite thing about the show is that they don't always talk about everything every other podcast is talking about. They don't cover all the news. They just have fun conversations about interesting topics in Star Wars, which is refreshing and fun to listen to every week. Exclamation point. Keep up the great work, guys! Exclamation point. So, I mean, we got so many exclamation points in that review. Can we get extra stars for that, too?
I think we should, and I think also I very much enjoy the fact that you find our topics interesting, because when we unveil our 5-part episode series talking about the sanitation situation on Coruscant and examining what the actual type of system that they would have to have in place would be deployed. I've lost some listeners now, haven't I? I'm
we
so sorry for that.
Probably have. John, just go to the next review. Go to the next review.
Okay. This one says, great Star Wars content. 5 stars from Yoda Rules 78. Says, these guys get it, and not only do they get it, They get it right. Look forward to more great discussions. And so do we. And I got to be honest with you that even though I didn't do it in a voice, this review, not only do they get it right, made me think of Barf from Spaceballs. When you're right, you're right. And you're always right. So thank you for that. Thank you. It's another lovely review. Thank you so much, Yoda Rules 78.
Well, and the last new one that we have here, it says, so relevant, 5 stars. This is from KC Trekkie FM, and they say, this show is a must in the current times that fandom is having, exclamation point. Keep up the good work, guys, 3 exclamation points. Love listening here in KC, exclamation point. Well, thank you for just being here with us, for listening to the show over there in KC. We really appreciate you diving into the show each and every week, and the fact that you've given us a review and called out us for exactly what we hope people will experience when they listen to Aggressive Negotiations, which is, again, our kind of catchphrase here has become nothing but Star Wars goodness. That's what right. We're here for. And we appreciate you listeners hearing that, feeling that, and letting us know that that's what you're experiencing. And our goal is to hopefully make sure that each and every week that keeps coming to you.
Absolutely. It's the reason we love talking about it is because the two of us can just talk about what we all want to hear about, which is Star Wars.
Well, and John, so wrapping up all the reviews real quick, just a reminder, we still got plenty of time for you to get your review in to be in the contest. Again, it's going to be a 1 in 30 shot, so it's the next 30 reviews that we've gotten. Obviously, those are a part of that. So make sure you get your review in and let us know what you think of the show. And then as soon as we get all of them in, we'll be doing our drawing, and we'll get that amazing prize package out to you as soon as we can. So, again, thanks. So much to Chris, our listener, for supplying those and supporting the show in this way. It's a huge deal for us, and we really feel honored that somebody would want to help us out in this way too. So
yes.
Now, besides all that, John, something that we have been contemplating for a long time, and it keeps getting pushed off because something will come up. And I promised the listeners, if you listen to the Star Wars Report with Bruce Gibson, that this might be happening soon, and it is going to happen. And so something I've been thinking a lot about, especially with so many things that have been coming between the dark times. We've had Rogue One, we've had Solo, we've had Rebels, and then, of course, we have this time period between Return of the Jedi and The Last Jedi, and where the galaxy seems to be a place that doesn't have as much focus on the spirituality aspect of life in the galaxy. And, of course, you know, especially in the dark times, there's no Jedi. Between Return of the Jedi and The Last Jedi, there's only one Jedi. And so I wanted to just start by asking you, what do you think that means? And do you think that Lucas was specifically trying to point towards this? There needs to be some form of spirituality in the galaxy for there to be some kind of balance. And when there isn't, something like the Jedi Order, which represents that, things go very wrong very quickly.
I think that you're onto something, because I think that there is very much a thread in Star Wars as a whole that embraces the idea that there is something more. What is that something more? Is it definable? Is it what you or I would recognize? That isn't really the question so much as, is it important to believe in something more? And I think that there's very much that thread throughout Star Wars where when you start looking around, I actually think now of Interstellar. You know, instead of looking up at the sky, if you spend all your time looking down in the dirt, life gets the way that it gets, you know, and it becomes something where there's a reason why episode 4 is A New Hope. It's because it is, and it leads to, the return of the Jedi. It could mean Anakin returning from the dark side. It could mean Luke bringing the Order back from the brink. However you want to spin that title or debate it, that's a beautiful discussion to have. But I do think that there's a very clear indication from arcs as well of the characters, because you have Han the Cynic come around. You have Leia learn that she too has a part to play in terms of the spiritual side of things, not just the material side. And you, of course, have Luke as the embodiment of those things. And so there's very much that thread. And you also see, conversely, that when the darker aspect of things is embraced, you get Palpatine, you get Vader, you get Dooku, those sorts of things. So I think there's very much as much as people like to claim that Lucas robbed the series of spirituality in the prequels, I think that you and I would both agree that it was more a step toward the idea of saying science and faith are not mutually exclusive, but are parts of the same whole.
I think when you look at, like we talked about last week, the Yoda arc and the whole idea of, you know, when he's talking to the Force Priestess and she says, you know, what you know as midichlorians, you know, that there is a reality to that. But then there's this larger faith aspect to that whole arc, which is that Yoda needs to believe in something bigger than himself, which can still teach him something. And letting go of that control and putting himself under the tutelage of somebody else. And so I think it's very clear to me that there is a real sense that there, in the Star Wars galaxy, there is a spirituality aspect that flows throughout the entire thing. And when we see the lack of that is when we really see the worst harm coming to the galaxy. And it reminds me of a quote from Lucas Interviews, that great book. If you've never read it, go pick it up, find it somewhere. It's fantastic. But he said that, because he's talking about the human condition, and he said, you know, I'm very cynical, and as a result, I think the defense I have against that is to be optimistic and think that people are basically good, although I know in my heart they are not. And I find that so fascinating, because you see that play out then, especially throughout the prequel times, as the Jedi become more and more arrogant, as the Jedi and become in some ways more and more decadent on Coruscant and further away from their mission of being selfless, and they lose that aspect, and the more and more selfishness creeps in, the more and more the dark side is fed, and then that's what leads to the dark side taking over. And what's kind of beautiful, and I think really as I've been thinking through this topic for a long time, the thing that really supports it to me is where we see the victories come then, and what we get later on, whether it's in Rogue One or what we see in Rebels. Those victories come through a connection in the Force. Mm-hmm. You know, Jedi Padawan, you know, Kanan and Ezra, they're the ones who help liberate Lothal, and the Empire never comes back. Rogue One, you have the Guardians of the Wills helping out, but you also have Jyn's belief that the crystal that her mother gave her, there is some power out there, and you can see her in different moments where she's almost praying. Not like cheer it, but there is a sense of belief that there's something bigger that's in
right
motion here. And so I think it's so interesting to actually chart those and kind of see how the resurgence of the Force was slowly growing to the point where you do get to Luke, and really the New Hope does come back. I think it's really fascinating to me.
As you're talking, what I find interesting is there is a true note about, you mentioned, you know, what you know as the midichlorians, and then the Jedi becoming decadent. the Jedi themselves become too rooted in the material. Mm-hmm. And I think that not just living on Coruscant, and of course, you know, Yoda to get away goes to Dagobah, which is the polar opposite. He's surrounded by the living force. Qui-Gon calls Dagobah pure, or as close to pure as it can be, or whatever the line is. But you also have what becomes their measure for whether somebody can become a Jedi is, yes, the midichlorians are a very clear mechanism to detect potential. But the Jedi should also look at the other things that they see through the cosmic force. They're so fixated, even Qui-Gon, who you would think would be above this, and Qui-Gon is probably my favorite Jedi still, but Qui-Gon looks at the midichlorian count, and everybody becomes fixated on the midichlorian count. And Yoda is our guidepost of them ignoring their misgivings because Anakin's actions free Naboo at the end, and they feel, and this has gone into more detail, of course, in the novelization and everything, but the Jedi Council is like, wow, maybe there is something to this kid, so we're going to, you know, go for it. But Yoda's the only one that's still saying, there's danger here. I sense something. And if the Jedi had not become so rigid, even in their methodology for locating potential Jedi, they would have sensed these things. They should have sensed the Dark Lord of the Sith to come up. They say that in Attack of the Clones when Yoda and Windu are talking. You know, blind we are of creation of this army we could not see. And the entirety of it points to even the Jedi, they have become complacent because they just live with the benefits of their connection to the Force, and maybe they've stopped pondering the greater meaning behind it. And so in a sense, their spirituality has become clouded. They're no longer looking through a pane of glass. They're looking through an opaque, milky window, if
yeah,
you will.
Yeah, I think there's a lot there, and I think absolutely 100% agree with what you're saying, because the whole idea of them losing even connection to the living force, because they're not surrounded by all living things. They're only surrounded by people, but the force is connected to all living things, and therefore, mm-hmm. you know, the importance of being on a planet where you can feel that and its impact on every living thing and not just, you know, beings. I think it's like you have this temple and it's built on nothing. I mean, it's built on.
But here's my question there, you know, while you're going with that, with Coruscant and being surrounded by living things and everything like that, I would love to see stories. I'd love to write stories, honestly, going back to the dawn of the Jedi and the Jedi as a religion, if you will, and those sorts of things, with them on a planet. Like, were they able to shape the destiny of the galaxy by being on those planets and being in tune with the Force and reaching out? And like Luke in The Last Jedi, even, they didn't even need to leave where they were to influence the way things were. And it, like, that would be a very interesting sort of time period to be in. I'd love to see Jedha before it got strip mined. Like, I'd love to find out that Jedha was like this big lush planet with like these teeming oceans and beautiful trees and stuff like that. But just over time and all of the you know, the mining and everything got stripped down to nothingness. But I think that there is a very disconcerting divorce in recognition of the Jedi mission, sometimes even by the fans. And also, especially by the Jedi themselves, you know, as fictional characters and stuff like that. But I think that even for a lot of us as fans, sometimes we forget exactly what you're saying. The Jedi, Yoda says, you know, Jedi don't seek adventure, and they, you know, they seek being one with things, and you know, all of these big lessons and everything. But it seems to be the hardest lesson even for the Jedi to understand, that they should actually be, they shouldn't be out being a police force. They should maybe be out there in the galaxy, simply out there, simply their presence affecting the flow of the great river, as it were.
I like that you brought in the idea of, you know, Luke and the Last Jedi, because that's something that I thought a lot about. Was one of the reasons that things went so south so quickly after Return of the Jedi was that Luke did not follow the mandate that he was given, which is pass on what you have learned, create a new Jedi Order, because the galaxy at that point is in need of this spiritual awakening almost, and part of that is what the Jedi are supposed to be about, is setting an example of that selfless life.
Yeah, and the thing is, this is where you and I go, maybe this is a whole other spin-off episode for us, because you and I go back and forth on this, but like, I don't even see Luke's mandate as being reestablished the Jedi per se. I take it more as Yoda saying, pass on what you have learned, as share this knowledge with everybody about how we needed to be reborn and rebuilt and everything fell. And to tie into our very topic of spirituality, go out there and evangelize, make everybody a believer again. Don't make it so that everybody's Han Solo or an Imperial agent. Go out there and find the Chirrutis. Go out there and find the Jyns and the Galens and get them to believe. And that becomes a very big thing. Now, I'm not saying he wasn't supposed to reestablish the Jedi themselves or anything like that, but I'm saying that I view his mandate as much more going out and getting the galaxy as a whole to believe again.
I guess for me, the thing is, the best way to do that is first to just start with passing on the knowledge he has to somebody, because you have to replicate yourself. And create some kind of disciple, basically. And I think that I honestly do. I think that that's the downfall, is that Luke, I feel like Luke at that point is afraid of repeating the mistakes of the Jedi previously. But also, again, like as we talked about last week, this is the point of having Force ghosts who can help guide you from the mistakes of the past, to learn from them, to move forward with a different future.
But see, yeah, I think a byproduct of Luke going out into the galaxy and reigniting the spark of hope and faith is something, the Jedi become a byproduct of that. I think that I would envision, if I were in charge of writing the story of what happened after Return of the Jedi or whatever, or I'm not, but even go back and, you know, as loath as I am to give out, you know, free ideas and stuff like that, but like, I'd love to go back to the first, you know, moves toward establishing a formal Jedi Order way in the past or something, because I think this is an argument that you'd find two Jedi having, you know, in the early days, where one would be saying, we need to go out, we need to get disciples, more Jedi, and then you'd have somebody like me saying, you know, to borrow a line from Pulp Fiction, because that's one of the things I love to do, you know, walk the earth like Kane from Kung Fu, and the disciples will come, as it were. You know, go out there into the galaxy, be the example, be the person that you should be in the Force, and those people will be attracted to you.
Right.
And because I think that consciously going out and trying to establish an order is a mistake on one level. I'm sure that there's probably somebody like pounding on their radio as I say that or something, but like, I think that there is an inherent mistake with that, with going out and seeking.
Right.
Qui-Gon finds Anakin by happenstance, and he trusts the will of the Force up to a certain point, because of course he influences the roll of the die, which is
right.
Shame
and
on
I don't,
him.
I don't necessarily think that we're actually saying too different of a thing, because I don't disagree with you. I think that. The point is that there is intentionality in what Luke is doing. His goal is to find those people, and that they, but allowing them to come to him in the same way that, you know, Yoda waited for Luke to come to him, you know, in that sense. But I do think that there is an activity role for Luke, but there's also a patience role for Luke. And I think that the balance there, definitely what we see at least, was not there at all, because it seems like, at least what we know from canon at this moment, really the reason Luke started this was more because he was worried about his nephew, which is from fear-based, instead of it being the completely trusting in the Force reason, which is, I've run into this person, and they are strong in the Force, and they seem willing to continue to learn from me. And, you know, like, it's the felicity of the Force, but it's also not because of Luke just, I mean, it's not Calvinistic. Luke isn't just sitting back, to use a theological term, just wait, you know, on his couch at home in Dagobah or whatever, waiting for somebody to come to him again. You know, like that there's an active and a passive role in this.
Sure.
And I feel like that Luke just never, at least it seems from canon, he just never finds that balance.
See, and that's why I would love to write a story. Maybe we could co-write. Let's pitch it now or something. But in all seriousness, I would love to see a story where Luke does go out and attempt this. You know, he has some hybrid of this where he's going out and he's wandering the galaxy and he's sowing the seeds, and something happens, or a series of things happen, where it causes him to retreat, and which spurs Leia to say to him, no, you need to do this. And so he becomes, the mistake he makes is too much intentionality, or what he grabs people and says, okay, we're going to make a Jedi Order, as opposed to going with what was working. Like, he gets discouraged for some reason.
Right. Well, and what's so fascinating is, so I just recently played through Battlefront 2, and there's a level where Luke runs into Inferno Squad. And he's on this planet looking for Jedi artifacts. And Inferno Squad, obviously, is his enemy. And yet, because he saves this guy's life, they end up working together. It changes this character's existence.
Mm-hmm.
And he becomes good in the end.
Spoilers.
Partly because of his experience with Luke. And so, like, I think that there was a part of that that was there. I think one of the things that I guess it is a bit frustrating is that we honestly just don't have enough information on what happened then. But So
let this be our pitch. Give us, we'll write it. We'll write it right now. We will write this book, and we promise you it will be good. Asterisk. But no, seriously, we promise you it will be good. I think that there is, but see, this is the difficult thing for me, is once it's officially written and published, it is what it is, right? And I enjoy, to a certain extent, as much as I wish there was more material filling out what happened between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens, and since we know that Last Jedi deviated from that, I wish they just would pop the safeties off and say, okay, well, we can just fill in what happened here. I mean, it seems silly to hesitate for that. But I enjoy this discussion we are having back and forth, because I think it feeds into that whole idea of the legends of Luke Skywalker, because there would be people sitting around debating, where is he? What's he doing? What's going on? And maybe that in and of itself, they could even do a movie about Luke that doesn't have Luke in it. And I know that book, The Legends of Luke Skywalker, which I still have to read. I know things get busy, but like, I think that would be, I honestly think that would be either an interesting film or even an interesting short limited Netflix series of, you could really do a lot of world building with, you know, one character is looking for Luke. One character is disheartened because Luke hasn't come to his planet yet, or her planet yet, or somebody knew Luke and she's waiting for him to come back or something. I think there would be some really interesting world building moments that you could have between the original and sequel trilogies.
kind of bringing it around, you know, for me, one of the things that really got me thinking about this whole idea was the fact that this sequel trilogy, things seem to have gone so wrong so quickly. And, you know, again, looking backwards in the Star Wars history, what we know is that, you know, for over 1,000 generations, the Jedi Knights were the guardians of peace and justice in the galaxy. So it was a long time that the Jedi had a very positive impact on the galaxy.
Sure.
It seemed to have been something that continued to get better and better and better, and then there was a decline and it got worse. And, you know, part of that came from, too, this whole idea, you know, with Lucas talking about, again, coming from some of those interviews, you know, this idea of how, you know, Star Wars is about things that strike a chord with people, loyalty, friendship, good, evil. You know, he said, there's a reason this film's so popular. And for him, he was trying to say, and these are his own words, that in a simple way, there's a God and there is a both good and bad side, and you have a choice between them. But the world was much better when you're on the good side. And just this idea that Star Wars, in and of itself, like the core of its idea is that there's a good and a bad side, which for him very much revolved around some kind of spirituality. I mean, he's not specifically talking about any specific God here, but it is very clear that for Lucas that's important. And I almost feel like there's this kind of like nebulous thing and that's somewhat happening, but to me it's always been that the Jedi, there is something significant about the Jedi quote unquote religion, and its connection with the Force and its understanding of the Force to have such an impact for so long. And to me, that was very clear that something was missing then when...
But let's spin this here, because as you're talking, I'm thinking, you're right. The, you know, Obi-Wan says, you know, for over 1,000 generations, and the Republic as it stood at the time of Attack of the Clones had been 1,000 years. Per Palpatine's words, and you know, you can parse all that stuff out all that you want, and the Jedi have been players. Was the spirituality really out there among everybody? I say yes. Okay, that's sort of a rhetorical thing, because I say it is, because even young Anakin, a slave on Tatooine, knows who the Jedi are and what they're about, at least has an inkling about it. And I think that, and Rey, all the way out in Jakku, knows about Luke Skywalker. She thought he was a myth, but he's real. So at least his stories have gotten out there. And I think that what is interesting, very interesting, is there's this trajectory for 1,000 generations, and then it hits the reset button. And then within 30 years, it hits the reset button again, essentially. And I think that the thing to resolve here in terms of the question of spirituality is, once there's a significant damage to the psyche of common spirituality, is it hard to get it back in the first place? And that's why the trajectory doesn't go the way it's anticipated after Return of the Jedi. Is it something where it's going to take some time to get that going, because you have 1,000 generations worth of momentum and then it stops dead, and then you've got to try to restart it? And I mean, Snoke seems to have some sort of philosophy that it's constantly just this short-term cycle of darkness rising and then light and then light and then dark and then dark and then light. But the Jedi, up to a certain point, and is it the fact that they did all gather together and come out from the galaxy? Like, sort of like the light was out there spread out throughout the galaxy, and then as they evolved and got to the prequel trilogy era, all of the candles were brought to one location, mm-hmm. or a small group of locations, and therefore the light didn't emanate as brightly. And so that is the trick, is that it's not reestablishing a temple or a formal order. It's getting them out into the galaxy again.
Well, and I think, you know, I look back and I'll say this, you know, the old EU, I think, actually did this pretty well, where Luke had reestablished a temple, but his goal was to train up knights than to go out, right? Mm-hmm. Their goal wasn't to stay. There was a hub where there was training because that was needed, but it had the aspect of like we make disciples and then we push them to go out, right? Like
right.
The goal is not to just stay in one place. And so I think, you know, I like what you said, that there's this idea of we had a stop and then we kind of started and it sputtered and stopped again. And now we're going to hopefully with Ray start again. But I like you also bringing in Snoke and what he said, because he is obviously very fearful, because he seems to have this understanding that the Jedi are kind of paramount to bringing the light back into the galaxy in a way that none of the other religions that we've seen that have to do with the Force do. And so I think to me, I kind of come down to, it seems like from all that we know, the Jedi themselves and spirituality that they bring to the galaxy are kind of paramount to the galaxy seeing a trajectory towards the light instead of the dark. That's really beautiful to me, honestly, because what we see throughout the series, and especially one of the reasons I love Rogue One, is the way that it dealt with there is no Jedi, but the idea of the Force and faith are so important to that. And then, of course, Rebels does that too, where you slowly are teaching Ezra the ways mm-hmm. of the Force, but in a way that almost feels much more like something that you saw in the old EU, where it's like it's a master and apprentice, and they're out there, they're doing it, and they're learning on the go, you know? And I think, again, Rebels, to me, seems to be the key of understanding what the future should look like for the Jedi.
And not just learning on the go, and not just a master and an apprentice, but they're learning in full view. There's full transparency. People mm-hmm. can see what's going on. So that, in and of itself, also gets out. If a master and an apprentice are out there in the world and people see what's happening, even if it's something they can't do, they're seeing these yeah. things demonstrated in front of them, so that there's less room for conjecture, and there's less room for casting aspersions on motivations. There's less opportunity for somebody like Palpatine to say, oh, yeah, you don't even know what they're doing behind those.
Right.
What are you? They're out there living the life, and people can look at them and say, well, mm-hmm. I want some of that. I want some of that in my life.
And they're in relationship with other people too.
Right.
Like that's the beauty. And we talked about that when we talked about like with Hera and Kanan and their relationship and how they made that work and how it didn't take Kanan away from being the Jedi he should be and mm-hmm. all of those things. Like they because the Jedi are in a community with others that aren't necessarily quote unquote Force sensitive, but they are part of the living Force. I think you actually are. I mean, we're really onto something here. I think, again, Rebels is the key, I believe, to showing us what the future should look like for somebody like Rey and training a new, you know, order of Jedi, that it is more disparate. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that there can't be one central location where they can come back to. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, no, yeah.
That's not the key to yeah. creating a new order.
No, yeah. I mean, every so often you have to go off and you do have to seclude yourself and
yeah,
you know, get
a retreat,
back in touch
yeah.
with things. And, you know, I mean, it, you know, how ironic even that, you know, those Irish islands where they filmed Luke in Episode 7 and Episode 8 were... That's what they existed for. That was a
yes.
thing that people went off to just commune and just think and ponder. And so, but it is finding that balance between meditation and action and example and those sorts of things. And let me pose one last question for you, because we're talking about the spirituality. Let's say, for the sake of argument, that Luke had died and nobody had known, that just Luke had died. Do you think that the Force and or the belief that Rey finds in Episode 7, even without Luke, would have been enough to start the spark? That Luke was, that we all approached it that Luke himself, a single person, was more important to us than he was to the Force. Like, the Force made the... Just speaking in shorthand, the Force made the Jedi without anybody being... Somebody had to be the first. Somebody was the first Jedi, right?
So I mean, so I just spoil it for everybody because they're already listening and they know, but the art here is Rey looking at Jedi Prime, the which is the mural you see there
right.
on Ahch-To, which is the representation of the first Jedi. So, yeah.
Right. And so would there, I mean, if Luke had died before Rey ever found him, do you think she still is that spark?
You know, I definitely believe in the Star Wars galaxy that the Force finds a way, a lot like life
sure.
in Jurassic Park universe. And so I think that it would have found a way to bring Rey to some place like Ahch-To, where she would have been able to find those Jedi texts and be able to find a way to start again.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, that's kind of what happened anyway. Yeah, Luke was there, but he didn't really do a great job of preparing her, I don't think, for what she's going to need to do. That is going to be up to her and the Force to figure out.
Sure.
And so I think, you know, we really kind of have that story in some ways. And, you know, they do have a very open book now. They can do pretty much anything they want. But I do think it's clear, at least that I'm coming away from this conversation, that somehow, some way, the idea of the light side of the Force coming back does have to do with the Jedi finding a way to reestablish themselves in some way. And how that looks and what it looks like is going to be fascinating to actually see.
I agree. I agree that it is. So if anybody wants to discuss with you their own fascinating take on the role of spirituality in the Star Wars galaxy, where can they find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter, MattRushing02. I'm on Instagram under the same name. You can find me here on the network doing Outposts with Drea Kaufman, talking about the Harry Potter series one chapter at a time. It's a lot of fun, and we're right in the middle of Book 4, The Goblet of Fire, so I hope that you'll check that out. We honestly have a blast. I'm over on the Trek FM network. I do a show called The Orb with Chris Jones, talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I'm also doing our General Geek Show. We talk all things geeky and as many different franchises as possible. So we love Star Wars over there, but we try to get in as many different franchises as we can. So again, that's the 602 Club. And then last but not least, I am doing Cine Stories with my good friend Courtney, and we talk about films through the lens of faith. And you can find those wherever you get your podcasts. But John, if anybody wants to sit down and commune with you through the Force or through social media about this idea that we were talking about today of spirituality and the Jedi, where can they find you?
Well, gosh, you can find me on Twitter as Kessel Junkie. You can also find me right here on the network, co-hosting Great Shot Kid with Mike Schindler, where we talk about the behind-the-scenes stuff of movies that you both love and not love. And you can also find me out there in the ether co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. But with all of that being said, Matt, I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
John, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.